Hello again.
Speaking of heartbreak, welcome to the Genuinely Spooky Podcast.
That's us. We are here, ready to bring you another spooky tale.
That's Kieran talking.
That is Kieran talking. I'm Kieran. In the flesh.
Not really.
In the ear. In the ear.
Bit creepy.
Bit creepy. But we're here. And we're back to our normal format, because I don't know this week's story.
Yeah. There were no spooky field trips for this episode.
Nope.
Unfortunately.
Just Ailey doing her research, getting the script together.
You know, it's the sacrifice I make.
Yeah.
It's such a hard life, getting to take deep dives into the things you're already interested in. It's just, you know, it's hard. It's a hard life.
I worry for you sometimes, you know. It's just so hard.
Made even harder by the fact that I'm currently drinking the most delicious cup of tea I may have ever had in my life.
I know. We were the wonderful recipients of some more Bird and Blend tea.
They surprised us. They sent us a present.
They did.
And I was over the moon. And Now I am enjoying a cup of cream egg tea. And I've never been happier. It's everything I want from a cup of tea. It's sweet. I can have it with milk because I'm a pleb. I love it. I'm a chocolate digestive gal, so this is perfect.
Right up your street. I have the hot cross bun tea, and it's really good. They do it every time. Every one of their tea. Like, how can it actually taste like that?
There's just an essence of it. You get the flavour.
Yeah.
Without necessarily all of the, like, you know, sugar sweetness.
Yeah.
Because with the chocolate digestive one, I don't want to say it's a subtle flavour, because there is a really nice flavour, but it doesn't taste like you've bit into a biscuit, but you get the essence of a chocolate biscuit.
Yeah, the same with this. I can taste hot cross buns.
And the cream egg one.
Yeah.
Helped because I've put sweetener in it.
I think I get thrown off because I drink a lot of coffee generally, and that has the tasting notes, and the tasting notes may not actually represent the flavours you can taste in the cup.
But you sometimes get that with whiskey, don't you?
Yeah, that as well. Because like with coffee, it's what the professional taster tasted with their setup, their grind and their water, and what water you use changes the flavours. So with water where you are, you might not be able to get any of those flavours.
And you're finding it different with the tea?
When this is, it's hot cross bun tea. I'm like, I must have like tasting notes of hot cross bun. But no, it just tastes like a hot cross bun in a cup.
And we would know, because we've eaten hot cross buns almost every day for the past like fortnight.
We've eaten quite a lot of hot cross buns.
They started selling them in the supermarket, and you just got some one day.
We have gone to town.
Not like crazy. Like, I'd have one for breakfast.
Yeah, one as a snack.
You know,
every hour.
You maybe. I would have my one for breakfast, and it would be good with my cup of coffee.
Do you get hot cross buns in America? As a thought for all our American listeners.
I don't know. I have been to America 3 times, and twice was to Florida, so I don't really have a good idea.
No. Well, if you don't know what a hot cross bun is, it's kind of like fruit toast in a bun shape.
But it has a very distinct flavour.
Yeah.
It's a distinct kind of dough, I think they use.
And it's an Easter treat.
And they're amazing.
For reasons unknown.
Just with butter. Toasted with butter.
Toasted with butter.
They're amazing. I have experimented with Nutella.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm weak. Some days it's just harder to get up and get going, and you need a bit of Nutella in your hot cross bun.
Do you know what? I need this, but with more sugar.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder. If you are in America and you don't know what we're talking about, then tell us you don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested to know.
I'm curious.
Never considered that.
But if you want to get yourself some amazing tea, you can do so in the link in the description below the podcast.
Yes, we have a lovely link from Bird and Blend Tea, where if you buy yourself some lovely tea through that link, click that link and it will take you to their website, then we get a commission. So it's a really good way to support the podcast, because you get some tasty tea, we make a little bit of money, and it helps us pay for hosting and all the fun stuff.
All the fun, boring stuff, which you don't have to know about. We can drink delicious tea and support us anyway.
Yeah, and you can feel good about it. Mm-hmm. And we'll be eternally grateful. We also have a Patreon. If you would prefer to support us and get some extra content, which we have been putting out 3 times a week.
Yep.
Since
February.
There's a lot up there now.
It's pretty good.
We do a wee blather every week. And we record, we've been recording it straight after we record the main podcast.
Yeah, more a debrief, extra info, and chatting deeper about some of the kind of tangents we touch on.
But when we end the season, which is next week.
Next week.
Can you believe it? Then we'll be talking about other stuff. And yeah. It's chatty, it's informal, it's not scripted. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But we've also been posting extra episodes over there every fortnight.
Extra episodes.
And when we don't have main episodes coming out, an extra episode will be coming out every week.
Yep. It's going to be pretty great.
So joining us starting April is the best time.
It's going to be a good time.
Because you'll get your generally spooky fix every week.
Every week.
We've also been posting the book club over there.
Yes, we have.
See, we've been busy. If you haven't, if you're not on Patreon, mm-hmm. you've been missing out. There's a whole load of stuff happening over there.
And as you can tell, Ailey's been busier than I have. Just
the Patreon is kind of my baby. I'll admit it. Yeah, we've been reading through The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, mm-hmm. which is a spooky novella. It's very creepy. It's very good. Means that you might get to listen to books that you've never read before.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is happening over there. Why aren't you over there?
It's a good time. Come and settle out with us.
I've been working really hard. Sir, excuse you.
What's all I've got?
You're not allowed.
Oh no. Banned from the Patreon.
Yes. It's my special Patreon club. Oh, Kieran also made an agreement with me. If we ever reach 10,000 patrons, then we are allowed to get a puppy.
I did. I said we could get a second dog if we get 10,000 patrons.
Yes, I would be open to a dog. It doesn't have to be a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
I would quite happily get a rescue dog. Because Odin's really good with other dogs. He's really friendly.
A wee dog.
And I think it would be really good for him. And I've had many discussions with listeners over Instagram
mm-hmm.
who feel similarly, that it's in Odin's best interest and it would be good for his health if he had a sibling.
I mean, it's everyone who's not walking this dog every day and picking up his poops every day that seem to be making these decisions.
I'm just saying this is the majority opinion. It's the majority opinion.
I already have one arch nemesis. I can't have two. They'll gang up on me.
So, you know, if you want to help me get my mm-hmm. second dog,
mm-hmm.
you know, we only need to reach 10,000 people. That's it.
One patron for every download of the podcast we've had so far.
We've had more than that.
We have had more than that now.
We have cleared 10,000 mm-hmm. downloads. We are over 12,000 now. We're doing good.
That's pretty good. It's pretty exciting. And we're happy to have you all here with us.
Just please help me get another dog. Great, thanks.
Okay, thanks, bye. Well, famous last words. But Ailey's worried this episode isn't going to be long enough. Now, you, the listener, will know how long it is. But I don't. I'm always like, oh, sweet, like a wee hour. And then it's 2 hours later. And I'm like, is it... I thought this was a short one.
Well, I have a little more authority in that opinion this week, because next week is our finale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to involve, has already involved, a lot of research and planning. We have a field trip for this episode that we're doing at the end of the week.
Yep.
So it's going to take a lot more work for the finale. So I picked a story where... there isn't necessarily as much background information as I would have liked. So I'm hoping, or not hoping, but if this one's a little shorter, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's just a wee one.
Because then I can turn my attention to this season's finale.
The season finale.
I like saving a really good story for the finale. Like the first season, it was the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm-hmm.
Second season, it was the Stone of Destiny. And I'm not telling you what this season is.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Unless you're listening to this in the future, you can just look. You know what we should ask the lovely listeners to do before we get into the story?
What should we ask them?
Please rate and review us.
That would be nice.
We've been looking at all kinds of podcast players and charts and things, and the only way really
mm-hmm.
that other people can find the podcast, other than word of mouth, is if you leave a rating and a review
yep.
saying what you think of the podcast.
Yes.
So even if you've been listening for ages... You've never gotten around to it. This is the perfect time because we're getting to the end of season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So just be honest. If there's things that you want us to change or there's things that you'd like us to do in the future, then tell us.
Yep.
Doesn't have to be a fake glowing review because we genuinely want to know.
But if you say, Ailey's great, but get rid of that Kieran guy, I will be upset.
I don't think so. Because sometimes I think that you are what makes this podcast.
Mm. We, it's us together, synergistically.
So yes, you can leave ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, if that's where you listen.
Yep.
You can now rate and I think review on Spotify, which yes. is a new feature. So if you've been listening to Spotify this whole time, now you can leave us a rating, which would really help us, because Spotify have all kinds of podcast charts.
Yeah, which is weird, because I don't know where they are.
Not sure.
But
just check your podcast player, depending on where you listen. If you listen on YouTube, then, you know, subscribe. That's probably all you can do there.
Yep.
But it would really, really help us, because it helps other people find the podcast.
Yep.
Which we can't do all on our own. But that's all I wanted to say.
Sounds grand.
I think that's all my bump.
We better roll the music. That was like 5 or 6 minutes of bump.
I know, I've held us back too long. I apologise.
What do we have today, Lee? Briefly.
Briefly? Well, I heard this story a long, long time ago, and it always stuck with me because it's just cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool story. It has a happy ending.
Oh, that never happens.
I know. I know.
I don't even have a single happy ending yet.
Have we? Happy ending? The Fairy Coffins wasn't terrible.
That's true.
That was our very first episode. Mm-hmm. That kind of had no ending.
Yeah.
Because no one knows what it was. The Garble's Vampire was okay.
That's true.
That was episode 2.
Mm-hmm.
Can't think off the top of my head.
You just left me hanging there since then, waiting for that good ending.
I thought you meant at the end of my sentence. I was like, no. I gave you a couple. But yeah, this has as happy an ending as you can hope for.
Yeah, it does.
When you're talking about real life and real history. This week, we're talking about Agnes Randolph, who is an utter badass.
Ooh, I'm always up for hearing about a badass.
She's so cool.
Never heard about her.
You should have, because she's very, very cool.
Maybe we'll have, once we like get to know her, maybe we'll know the story.
Maybe. When was it that happened? That happened with the Sonny Bean story. Or no, it didn't. It went the other way.
Yep.
I'm talking shite. I know I've said a million times that we're going to be doing a series on the Wars of Independence.
Yep.
I'm planning for next year.
Yeah.
That's my hope, because I want to take a good amount of time to do it properly. But this story takes place during the Second War of Independence.
Hmm.
And I didn't want to save it for the series, because this is just too good. I wanted to have its own episode. But to understand how it all came about and why Agnes did what she did, we kind of have to have a brief history lesson of the Second War of Scottish Independence.
Sounds good.
Are you amenable to that?
I'm okay with that. I could cope with that.
Okay. It is 1332.
Ooh.
That's where we are. A man called Edward Balliol is currently 49 years old. Do you recognise the name Balliol, Kieran?
I do. It has come up before. John Balliol.
Yes.
That's all. Mary Queen of Scots?
Episode? No.
No.
Kind of, but no.
I don't know. That's all I've got.
Well, we have talked about him in the past, mm-hmm. John Balliol. I think we talked about him the most in our Stone of Destiny episode, but he's come up a few times.
Yeah.
And Stone of Destiny is season 2, episode 10, if you want to check it out.
It's a goodie.
Great finale. Love that episode. Very proud of that episode.
It's a goodie.
If you want to get like shivers of patriotism down your spine, then give that one a listen, because it makes you feel good. John Tomb Tabard Balliol.
It's a good name.
Empty Coat Balliol.
Oh, that's not such a good name.
He was the one who was chosen to take the crown of Scotland after King Alexander III and then his granddaughter Margaret died suddenly.
Okay.
Leaving Scotland with no monarch. Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Yep.
The decision was made among a group of Scottish noblemen. And at the head of this council was King Edward I of England.
Yes.
He was leading it. And he wanted John Balliol because he thought that he could kind of control him.
Yeah.
And apologies if I'm repeating myself, but I don't want you to get lost if this is the first episode from us you've ever listened to.
Yeah, and you know, I've forgotten, so.
Well, there you go, there you go. This is for Kieran's benefit. Now, King Edward's interference with the Scottish crown wasn't well received, and this basically led to the First War of Scottish Independence.
Okay, okay.
This is very much in a nutshell, but this is just what you need to know. Eventually, John Balliol ended his support of King Edward and formed the Auld Alliance with France. Edward was raging, invaded Scotland to make Balliol pay for what he had done. Now, he invaded in 1296, and there was a major battle at a place called Dunbar. Now, Dunbar is in East Lothian. It's on the east coast of Scotland, south of North Berwick.
South of North Berwick, got you.
Which we've talked about before.
Yep.
The North Berwick witch trials. North
Berwick witches.
Dunbar is also just a little bit east of Gilmerton House, which is where Archibald Kinloch lived, who murdered his brother a couple of episodes ago.
You know, Scotland's not very big.
It really isn't. it really isn't. Edward really wanted Dunbar Castle, which should have been an easy task because the Earl of March was the guy who owned the castle, and he was on the side of the English. So it should have been an easy one just to sort of bring under control.
Nip in.
Dunbar Castle's right on the coast. It's on, like, a cliff. And, or I don't even know if it's, if you could call it a cliff, but it's on the water's edge, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not a sandy beach. And it was seen as a pretty impenetrable fortress.
If it was on a sandy beach, it would be Sandbar Castle.
You look so pleased with yourself. I'm gonna create a photo series of Kieran post pun. And they're going to be the most glorious images of a man who's never happier than when he has made the pun that he thought of and immediately had the chance to share.
You'll catch it from, like, the minute it sparks in my head, the eyebrows will be like, oh, yeah, go on. It's a quick wait
all
for
those,
a moment.
All those micro expressions that people talk about.
Little eyebrows going up.
You get what I'm saying about the castle, though. It was...
Yes.
It was high enough away from the water that you couldn't immediately get to it. You couldn't walk to it. It was really imposing, and Edward wanted it. He wanted it under his control. Now, the Earl of March was Edward's man, like I said, and his title was in reference to an area that was called East March, not in Skyrim.
I was just thinking that sounds familiar.
It's in Northumberland, so it's near the border, but it's on the English side of the border.
In that Englandshire.
Yes, yeah, so he had land in Scotland and England. The Earl of March was Edward's man, but his wife, Marjorie Comyn, was not the king's woman. She belonged to an important Scottish family, the Comyns, who we've also talked about. And Marjorie was very much on the side of the Scots in this war, not Edward. So what she did, without her husband's permission or knowledge, as far as I could tell, she basically opened the doors of Dunbar Castle and let the Scots come in and occupy it.
Oops, did I leave the door open?
No.
Oh, silly me. It couldn't have been me. I'm just a frightful woman.
Yeah, she just led them in. Like, yeah, have it.
Nice.
Edward responded. He sent his troops to Dunbar, and the Scots army were also based at Dunbar, but they knew they wouldn't be able to hold it against the English. They sent messages pleading with John Balliol, who's supposed to be their king, for aid. They wanted his help to oppose the English.
Presumably he was busy picking his nose.
Well, he delivered, kind of. He was pretty useless as a leader all round. He really wasn't a very good king. He had a really bad reputation. And he did send men to help face Edward's army, but he didn't go himself, which was very much noted. You know, in that very significant way.
Yep.
Noted.
Your absence was noted.
Yes. And unfortunately for the Scots, the battle did not go well. Not well at all. Basically, the Battle of Dunbar was kind of what sealed the Scots' defeat in the First War of Independence. Or it signalled a change where Edward was able to gain a lot of power. Because ultimately, Scotland did become independent. But, you know, at this point, it secured a larger defeat. And the reason they were defeated, and it's one of the things that appears again and again when you look at English military history, is that their strength came from their discipline. They were very uniform. If they mounted a cavalry charge, it was very effective. They were organised, and They had that military discipline, which the Scots on this occasion didn't have. They were more disorganised, and that's what won the English Dunbar, basically.
Pretty good.
It was over pretty quickly. Lots of important Scottish nobles and knights were taken captive, which wasn't great.
I can just think of Chicken Run. They're organised.
I thought you meant Chicken Run as in, like, that's how they ran, or that's how they charged. Oh, doing a Chicken Run,
no. The Chicken Run movie.
They're organised.
They're organised. The English didn't stand a chance.
They're making a sequel of Chicken Run.
How?
There's a second one coming out.
Oh, my days. Well, that's getting blathered about.
Yeah, the battle was over pretty quickly. And Marjorie Comyn's father, she's the one who let the Scots take Dunbar Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was one of the people taken captive.
That's a shame.
Which was bad. Basically, all you need to know is that this defeat was a huge blow, and it was one of the catalysts for John Balliol surrendering to King Edward a little bit later on.
Yeah.
And this is all relevant. It will come back round to Agnes.
We're circling it round.
Yeah. John Balliol was stripped of all his titles and power in public in front of everyone. He had the Scottish coat of arms literally ripped off his clothes.
Oofed.
Which is why he got the nickname Empty Coat, Two-Towered. Because his coat of arms was made empty. His coat of arms was an empty shield.
That makes sense.
Because he had everything taken away in a really humiliating display of power from Edward.
At least he power grabbed while he could. That's the Tory way.
After this, which is something we haven't really talked about before, John Balliol and his son, Edward Balliol, were taken away to the Tower of London. And they were held prisoner there for a while. Edward Balliol, John's son, stayed at the Tower of London until 1299. So 3 years. John Balliol, I think the Battle of Dunbar was in 1296. And I think Balliol surrendered soon after. So 3 years later, his son was allowed to leave the Tower. And he went to live with his grandfather in Surrey. So he was living in England. And at this time, he would have been 16. So by that time standards, he was a man.
Yeah.
So that's where Edward is. That's the state of the Balliols. Now we need to turn our attention back to north of the border. In 1329, King Robert I of Scotland, Robert the Bruce, died.
Oh.
His son, David II, became king. But David was only six.
It's not great.
Not quite ready.
No.
Not quite ready to be king. Probably still learning how to eat all his dinner.
Yeah.
You know.
And trying to deal with going to bed early and on time. Those are his biggest woes, I think.
Trying to steal stuff from the kitchens or, you know, play with his friends.
Yeah. Did by any chance a group of advisors swoop in to help him?
Well, kind of. Because David wasn't even nearly old enough to be king, a man called Thomas Randolph became regent, and he was ruling and looking after Scotland until David was able to. From all accounts, Thomas Randolph was a good guy, and he supported David. He wanted David to be a good king, so he wasn't just out for himself, is what it looked like anyway. But we've talked about Thomas Randolph before.
The name's familiar.
Yes, I was a little cryptic about it in our episode on Marion Carruthers and Comlongan Castle.
Yes.
But I mentioned Thomas Randolph then, because he was the Earl of Murray, and he gave the land that Comlongan Castle was built on to his nephew.
Oh.
That's where the Comlongan Castle episode started.
Yeah, that's last episode for those who don't know.
No, it's not. It's episode not. 7. Last week we talked about the Bran Seer, my dear. Oh,
so we did. Man, where am I?
I'm glad that I can make such a mark on your memory.
Nothing else does, as everyone who's listening will have realised.
So this is the same Thomas Randolph I spoke about then.
Yes.
Thomas Randolph is Agnes Randolph's father.
Here we go.
So he's a big deal. He's regent of Scotland and a staunch supporter of King David, which will become important in a bit. You with me so far? I know I've given a lot of names.
I'm with you, I think. I've forgotten the name of the person whose episode this is about, though. Agnes.
Agnes Randolph.
It's that Agnes. Okay, that's fine. I assume so. Like, wait, what if that's a different Agnes? I'm with you.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Edward Balliol, remember who I'm talking about? John mm-hmm. Balliol's son?
Yep.
He could see at this point that Scotland was kind of vulnerable
mm-hmm.
because David was so young and the country was being run by a regent. And he was pretty keen to take back what he thought was rightfully his.
Mm.
Because he believed, you know, by birthright, he should be the Scottish king. Because his dad was.
Yep.
Even though he abdicated and was basically run out of the country.
Yeah.
And there were actually nobles in Scotland at this time who still supported Balliol.
Mm.
Because they hadn't agreed or they hadn't liked Robert the Bruce. And Robert the Bruce had taken their lands and their titles from them, and they want them back.
Fair play.
So they thought if they supported a different king, that would happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everyone's out for themselves.
Yeah, that's the crux of it, isn't it?
But even this support from other nobles wouldn't be enough to take back the crown
mm-hmm.
from a now established monarchy. Good thing, then, that Edward III of England, who was now king,
mm-hmm.
decided to support Edward Balliol in claiming the throne.
Interesting.
But he did it in secret.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want anyone to know that he was supporting him.
Oh, man.
Because he felt if there was a Balliol on the throne, then England would have more influence in Scotland.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure Edward Balliol was... I think he might have been married into the English royal family. I can't remember exactly. But it was the same. It was a similar thing to what happened before. They felt that they could control Balliol and bring the countries closer together.
Yep.
But ultimately, Edward III of England would be his overlord.
Yes.
With me?
I'm with you.
So we're in 1332, like I said at the beginning of the episode.
Here we are.
Edward Balliol's in his 40s. He's a man. David is a young boy. And this is also the year that Thomas Randolph died.
Oh.
And he was the regent. And this was when Edward Balliol decided to strike. The dog's dreaming.
Striking he is. Swooping in to claim the throne.
Mm-hmm. Is he okay?
I think so.
The dog's yelping and dreaming.
Yeah.
He does this quite a lot. He must have very vivid dreams because there's quite often he's like yelping or running or like... eating.
Yeah, I looked over the other night at him because he was making noise and his foot was twitching, but his nose was like snarling. He was just there just being like... And then he woke up and was staring at me. Like, it's okay.
Dad, what do you want? Leave me alone.
I just dreamt that you stole my food. Now I hate you.
So Edward Balliol effectively stages an invasion of Scotland.
Yeah, I'm curious how... Is he just going to swan in and be like, this throne's mine now?
Well, he had the support of lots of nobles,
mm-hmm.
so they were able to muster men. And this invasion, Edward's actions, are basically what started the Second War of Scottish Independence.
Got you.
Because now there's clashes between supporters of David
mm-hmm.
and that royal line, which has been established, and the Balliols.
Mm.
I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of it, because we don't need to know everything for this story, but this is kind of what's happening and this is where we are.
This is the flavour and the atmosphere.
Yeah. So there is conflict, we're at war, lots of people are falling out, there's a lot of stabby-stabby happening.
So what's Agnes Randolph up to?
Well, after a series of battles, Balliol had to flee Scotland in 1333, which... then escalated the war because Edward III used this as a reason, as an excuse to officially invade Scotland and to support Edward because he's, no, this isn't right. He's had to leave the country. Now this gives me cause to invade because this is unjust.
What a bastard.
So now Edward was openly invading Scotland.
Mm.
And now we can get back to Agnes Randolph because now the countries are officially at war. We made it.
We made it. We're here.
Now, Agnes was born around 1312.
Okay.
1312-ish is what I saw. So she was in her early 20s when war broke out and when her father died. Because he died in 32.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if this is right. But it could be because it was acceptable at the time. But it seems that Agnes married a man called Patrick in 1324. Which would make her 12. I don't know if that's correct because there's different dates.
Yeah.
But it seems that it could be true, because that was a thing.
That was a thing that happened. We talked about that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time. He was the 9th Earl of Dunbar and March.
Okay.
So remember I was talking about them before?
Yep.
He was now the owner of Dunbar Castle, and his mother had been Marjorie Comyn.
Oh. All circles round.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Scots suffered a pretty major defeat in the war in 1333,
mm-hmm.
in a battle called the Battle of Halidon Hill. Now, it happened near Berwick, which Patrick was in charge of. That came under his territory, his mm-hmm. title, his responsibility. And he was forced to surrender it to the English. He had to give up the town of Berwick.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Is Berwick different to North Berwick?
There's North Berwick, which I think is what's being talked about, but it might be Berwick-upon-Tweed, which is south.
Oh.
I saw Berwick, so that's what I'm going with.
We'll just go with that. It doesn't really matter. I was just curious.
Later, though, Patrick fought for the Scots again. So he came back.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of flip-floppy. He supported the Scots and the English over the course of his life.
Ah, someone else who's just supporting the winning side.
Well, see, I saw one explanation was that this title has land in Scotland and England.
Oh.
So he's just trying to sort of stay the course in between,
yeah.
so that he's not affected.
Mm-hmm. Looking out for himself.
Which makes it make more sense.
Yeah, that does make more sense.
When you consider it that way. And I was surprised, but I read that he actually helped Edward II escape Bannockburn.
Oh, wow.
After he had been defeated.
That's pretty mega.
Like, I'm surprised he was allowed back into the fold after that. That's pretty severe. But he was.
Well, there you go. Maybe he denied it. Maybe a rumour. Who knows? Crazy.
But he sheltered him, I think, at Dunbar Castle so that he could escape. And then he escaped by sea.
Oh, that's bold.
Mm-hmm. But by the time that Patrick married Agnes, he was one of the signatories of the Declaration of Arbroath.
Which we've talked about.
Yes.
And it's not the one I confused it with.
No.
Which I've never forgotten.
That's fine. Yeah, this is a very important document that basically supports Scottish independence.
Yes.
And Patrick was also an important figure in the Scottish army by this time.
Very good.
In 1338, Patrick was further north in Scotland fighting with his men.
Mm-hmm.
In various skirmishes happening there. And Agnes remained at home in Dunbar Castle. She was left alone with very few other people. She had her ladies-in-waiting, her maids, a few guards, and the usual castle staff. Staff seems a strange word because it seems too modern, but, you know, like the cooks and the people who kept the castle running. So not very many people. Edward III's attempt to get Edward Balliol back on the throne were not going well at this time. He had to make some progress and he had to get some wins under the belt to kind of secure his position.
Yep, yep.
So his eye turned to Dunbar Castle. Now he ordered one of his closest friends, one of his closest allies, a man called William Montague, to lead a force of 20,000 men to take Dunbar Castle.
That's a lot of men. For an undefended castle?
Mm-hmm.
Or an unmanned castle?
Because all of the quote-unquote men are at war.
Hmm. It's sneaky.
Now, Montague was an intimidating force to reckon with. He had already proven himself in war. He'd fought in France. And he was an excellent leader in battle. And he'd been rewarded by the king with being made the Earl of Salisbury.
Ooh, very nice.
He was also made the Lord of the Isle of Man, but at this time, when he was made the lord of it, it was under Scottish rule. So the king was just giving Scotland the middle finger. He's like, no, he's the lord of it now.
Yep.
And then later, Montague took the Isle of Man back from the Scots and then became the lord of it.
I mean, it's fair play, but I hate it. For him and his own interests, I'm almost like, oh, well, I mean, you know, you were given it, so you go get it, I guess.
But was he given it?
Mm.
Because it wasn't the king's.
No. Oh, what a bastard.
A lot of issues with that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to get so much rage through the whole season of Scottish Independence. The Scottish Independence Wars.
Maybe I should, like, pre-record it and then I can at least get through it. But yeah, the Isle of Man. Hold on.
I don't really know where the Isle of Man is.
It's not in Scotland.
I didn't think it was that far north.
Hold on.
Hold the phone.
Yeah, the Isle of Man is sort of, it's south of Stranraer, and it's between England and Northern Ireland.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking.
Basically. But at that time, it's not anymore, at that time, it was under Scottish rule.
Mm.
But then Montague took it.
Yeah.
So he was the lord of the Isle of Man. But just to give you an idea of the type of person that he is.
Yeah.
That's who's coming to take Dunbar Castle.
The specific type of arsehole that he is.
King Edward and Montague had been friends since they were children. They were very close. A lot of the articles I read really weirdly emphasised like how close they were.
Hmm.
It's like they were trying to imply that they were gay without saying they were gay. It was really weird.
That's random.
So if that's a theory, just say it. It's not a bad word.
I know.
So they were extremely close, never out of each other's company. Very close, very intimate. Well, just
they can just be gay. That's okay.
It was so weird. So absolutely no truth in that. They were very close and had known each other since they were children. But, you know, there's a power imbalance there because one of them is a king.
Yeah.
And King Edward was sending Montague to Dunbar with the expectation that he would do it quickly and he would do it properly.
Yep.
He was trusting him.
Trusting you, bro.
So that's a lot of pressure because, you know, he's a king.
Yeah. Well, it's your best friend, but also your king asking you to do it.
Exactly.
It could all very quickly go to shit.
And, you know, it's his reputation.
Mm-hmm.
He's built up a reputation at this point of being a good leader. But they hadn't taken into account Agnes Randolph.
Oh, shit.
And they absolutely should have. On the 13th of January, 1338, Montague arrived at Dunbar Castle with his 20,000 men.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in winter. It's very cold in Scotland in January. 20,000 men have turned up at the door. And I can't imagine how Agnes must have been feeling.
Yeah.
Because Patrick's still not home. She has the run of the castle to herself. She's the lady of the manor, literally. It'd be very intimidating.
With 20,000 men at your door.
Especially for it to happen when you're alone.
Mm. Like,
it doesn't matter whether or not it's a man who's with you. Just not having the person that you trust.
Yeah. Just your partner. And, you know, all of his military force.
Yeah.
I imagine her just Monty Pythoning it in the Holy Grail.
Keep that in your brain.
Yeah, John Cleese being on top of the door going, "Your mother smells of elderberry." But I'm here in the name of the king. Well, fuck you.
Just wait.
Oh, okay, then.
Just wait. It's going to be good.
You should definitely watch Monty Python's The Holy Grail if you haven't.
Or you could just listen to the story.
That's true.
It seems like Edward and Montague picked their moment on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they had intelligence and they knew that Patrick was away. And they assumed and figured that attacking it when there was only a woman home
mm-hmm.
would be a piece of cake.
Yep.
Because they're sexist bastards.
And I was like, oh, her delicate sensibilities will overcome her.
She'll just pass out and we'll yeah. walk in the doors. Not so.
Mm.
Montague arrives and comes towards the gate of the castle, which Agnes has wisely shut.
I mean, good first move.
Yep, yep. Tick. Initiative test. Passed. And he makes his demands of Agnes to hand over Dunbar Castle.
Mm.
Or they would attack. When I imagine this, I see him as being like really smug and cocky with like a really thin moustache.
Oh, yeah.
But there's no proof of that at all.
No.
It's just, why is he? You know, a face you want to slap. You know, like the Duke in Moulin Rouge, just like.
Mm, yeah.
Like that.
Oh, just that like slightly upturned nose, like he's smelling something bad. Ew. Mm.
But, to his surprise, Agnes refuses. She will not let them into the castle, and she will not surrender.
I mean, I bet he's so confused by that, he doesn't know what to do. I'm like, I just didn't think this was a possibility.
I know. I would say they didn't plan for that, but he has 20,000 men with him.
Well, there's only so much planning you need.
You know, he brought the resources, but he might not have the plan.
Mm.
So yeah, Agnes locked down the castle and she decided that she was going to stand firm. And it makes sense when you think about her family. They'd been resisting the English for a long time. Now, her father had been the regent of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the Earl of Murray.
Yes.
And he got the title from Robert the Bruce himself for his early support. He'd supported Bruce from the beginning. That's her her heritage, her legacy.
Yeah.
So she wasn't going to give up without a fight.
Not just going to roll over for that.
No. In fact, what she did was she supposedly stood on top of the castle ramparts at the front.
Oh, wow.
You know, the outer wall.
Yep.
And announced down to the army below, "Of Scotland's king I hold my house, I pay him meat and fee. And I will keep my good old house, while my house will keep me."
Nice. That is badass. Mm-hmm.
To an army of 20,000 men. Yeah, yeah. And who is effectively the right-hand man of the English king.
Yep. Then she just flips in the bird and gets out of there before an arrow hits her.
That would be me.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a fight is what she got. Because the 13th of January, 1338, marks the beginning of the Siege of Dunbar.
Oofed.
Montague's forces begin attacking and besieging the castle. And their goal is to try and force Agnes's hand to give up Dunbar to them. Standard fare, really.
Yep, yep.
They started by using a catapult to hurl massive boulders at the castle.
I wondered what sort of siege... Oh, pardon me. Oh,
pardon you. Is it Hot Cross Bunny? I mainly just wanted to say Hot Cross Bunny. I won't lie.
Oh, yeah, hot mess. Hot cross.
No, bunny.
I wonder what kind of siege equipment they'd have.
Well, they have catapults.
Hmm.
And they're using them. They're trying to break down the defences and they're trying to... Not even necessarily destroy the castle, but, you know, intimidate Agnes.
Yeah.
They're going to break in.
To rough it up a bit.
Very intimidating. And I actually have in my notes here talking about you and Scott wanting to build your own trebuchet.
Yeah, a friend of mine. We definitely want to build a trebuchet in the garden because our respective houses are back onto fields. So it should be fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad it hasn't come to fruition, but I am in constant fear that one day I'm going to wake up and it's just going to be there. Oh, this medieval bringer of death.
What a cloudy day outside. It's really dark this morning. Open the curtains and there's a trebuchet at the window.
Yeah.
Just a wee one. Just a wee one.
Can you get a wee one?
You can maybe get a wee
Does
one.
Does that exist?
I watched a video of a guy who had a Viking funeral for his 20s on his 30th birthday.
For his 20s?
Yeah. He made a giant cardboard Viking ship.
Wow.
And then launched Roman candles at it and burnt it down.
Fair play.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Maybe we should do that.
I know, right? That was badass.
But we're only 6 months apart. We could do that around like Christmas time.
Hmm.
For the new year.
I think he wrote a book, like How to Have a Viking Funeral.
I want to read this book.
Yeah.
If you wrote that book and you're listening, I would like to read your book.
Anyway,
back to the castle being brutally attacked.
Yes.
The big boulders caused a fair bit of damage to the castle. They did make contact, they did manage to hit it, but it wasn't enough that the soldiers could break their way in.
Mm-hmm.
But in true badass fashion, once the onslaught had ended for the night, one night, Agnes ordered her ladies-in-waiting to dress in their finest clothing, and she followed suit. Now, ladies-in-waiting, they weren't the same as servants. Ladies-in-waiting were generally from noble families.
Oh, okay.
And they were supposed to be helpers and companions to more noble women.
Strange.
If that makes sense.
Yep, it does.
So they have fine clothing, is what I'm trying to say. So they all got changed, really nice dresses, and then she told them to follow her, which they did. She climbed the stairs to the outer ramparts, so the outer wall,
yep,
where the boulders had landed. So they're standing and walking amongst the wreckage. The ladies stood on the ramparts in full view of the opposing army.
Mm-hmm.
And then Agnes drew her handkerchief out of her dress with a little flourish and began very overdramatically dusting the spots and the marks where the boulders had hit. And she instructed her ladies to do the same.
That's amazing.
Look at this mess. Just clean this up a bit, it'll be fine.
No, that won't do at all. Gentlemen, you missed a spot.
Like, damn.
That is badass.
That's some sass.
That is.
You often tell me to stop giving you so much sass. This is a whole new level of
this
sass.
This is next level sass. I appreciate it. That's sass to aspire to.
Mm-hmm. And Montague didn't like it.
I can see why.
So the siege continued.
I wonder if there was less danger. Because if it was a well-built castle, it wouldn't be taken down. And because there was nobody there, there was nobody to be hit by these rocks.
Yeah.
It depends how big they were.
Must have been a factor.
If they could, because if they were smashing it to bits, then it's obviously bad. But it's not falling on anybody, because there's nobody, or there's so few people there, they could just shelter.
Yeah.
Kind of deep within.
The people who were in the castle, they were fighting back to a degree, which we'll talk about.
Mm.
But there really weren't many of them there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what they did.
Badass.
The attacks continued over, you know, several days, moving on and on, mm-hmm. and the castle didn't fall. Dunbar was widely considered to be impenetrable. It's a big fortress castle. Like some of the places we've talked about before are built for aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Dunbar was built for security, so it's very difficult to breach.
Yep.
Remember I said the castle's on the coast?
Yes.
Well, Montague didn't do his homework before he came to the castle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't actually realise that there was a secret entrance to the castle.
Nice.
That you could only get to by sea.
Oh, very cool.
It was a, I think it was a postern. It's like a secondary entrance to the castle. And this you could only get to by water.
Nice.
So what would happen was fishermen from the local area would sneak past these huge galley ships that Montague had taken and hired to help with the defence, mm-hmm. so that no one could sail away from the castle. But these fishermen would sneak past and they would bring Agnes and people stuck in the castle food.
Amazing.
And fish to keep them going.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't being starved out.
Yeah, well, that's what I wondered. I wondered if, because, again, there was fewer of them, if they could just make their food last longer.
Well, there's fewer of them and this is winter. So they already have a pretty large stock of food because they were prepared for winter. So a lot had been brought into the castle already.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't relying on fresh stuff being brought in day on day.
Yeah.
They had reserves too. But I just thought that was really funny that they were just nipping past them to the secret door.
Don't mind us.
One story from the battle tells of an English soldier who was shot with an arrow by one of Agnes's men. And he was standing right next to Montague.
Oofed.
Who was the intended target of the arrow. The archer only missed by inches, even though he was shooting from a pretty incredible distance.
Yeah.
From where Montague was standing in the castle wall.
Good work.
Now, the arrow made its way through all of the soldier's impressive armour, which had three different layers. It was standard English armour at the time. And it pierced his heart. The soldier collapsed, and Montague was horror-struck. And apparently, he said, "There comes one of my lady's tire pins. Agnes's love shafts go straight to the heart." Now, this annoys me, because he's busy talking about love and Cupid and everything. But he was very nearly killed, and he wouldn't say that if it was a man.
No.
And talking about her love shafts go straight to the heart. No, she's trying to kill you.
It was it, mate. You almost got assassinated. We almost got killed.
You almost got what was coming to you.
Yeah. I wonder how close it actually was. Because everyone would exaggerate. Oh, I almost got hit. It was like inches away from coming into me. When it was like four people over. And also the person who shot there, like, oh, I was just like so close to hitting him. Like actually in a different field.
I suppose it depends where the story came from. Because if it came from the English side, and they were saying it was someone standing next to Montague, it makes him look bad.
Oh, see, I thought it would make him look death-defying.
Oh, I thought it would make him look weak because they were able to get him from the castle without having to leave.
Yeah.
I don't know. Apparently that's what he said, and it really annoyed me. But you're not... I know, you're only saying that because she's a woman.
Kicking your ass.
I know. Nearly killed you. But over the time that the siege was happening, Montague was getting more and more frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
It was expected that he would take the castle in days, if that. But now the weeks were dragging on. And it was humiliating.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to save his reputation because there was no military force in the castle. But he can't get in with 20,000 people.
Yeah.
He had to break Dunbar Castle. For Agnes, I'd imagine she's feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
She's protecting her home, defending her family and her castle staff, which again feels like the wrong word, but I don't know.
Castle servants?
You know what I mean.
Yeah, castle folk.
The people who are there with her.
Castleites.
So she's feeling pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But one day, they notice movement among the English troops.
Mm-hmm.
And a huge wooden tower crept into view.
Uh-oh.
Montague had decided to bring in a siege tower to try and win the battle. And this was referred to as a sow, but I don't really know why.
Don't know.
Like a pig. Sow. Oh. Don't know. If you've seen the last Lord of the Rings movie, then you kind of know what this looks like. In the final battle in the last film, there's these big, massive metal towers that have orcs in them, and they get rolled up to the place that they're sieging. This was the same thing, but it was wooden.
Yeah.
And it was a war machine.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. It was a huge piece of equipment. It was deadly.
Was it pushed by ogres?
No.
Trolls?
I believe not. Oh, I believe not. Just okay. People.
Meh.
In this one.
Can't have everything.
Don't worry, this is already a good story, trust me. Montague brought the tower fairly close to the walls of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
That was its purpose, because that was what was going to break the defences. And Montague was now convinced he was going to be victorious. This was going to do it. Massive, expensive, dangerous war machine, like
I said. I've got a big tower.
Exactly. But Agnes had other ideas. Now, in the panic that I'm assuming must have been rife in the castle at that point, looking at that approaching.
No.
Yeah. Agnes came up with a plan.
Mm.
First, she shouted over the castle walls down at Montague, telling him to, quote, take good care of his sow. Sow?
Sow? S-O-W?
Is it? Yeah. Take good care of it. basically taunting him. And then she disappeared again. She and some of her servants disappeared and came back to the ramparts. And Agnes ordered for one of the massive boulders that had been catapulted at them by Montague's men to be thrown off the battlements at the siege tower.
Nice.
Because the height that they were actually closer to the top of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
So they threw the boulder, they managed to do it. And what happened was the boulder crashed through the sow near the top and smashed its way all the way through the middle.
Oh, that's solid. That's good work.
Sending the men inside it in all directions, men fleeing, and the siege tower was completely crushed and was now completely useless.
Nice.
It was like kindling.
Amazing.
Using a boulder that they had thrown at her.
Oh, man. He is making a pig's ear of this.
So Montague had suffered another humiliating defeat, and the castle was still safe in Agnes's hands. So what do you do if you're in Montague's position?
Once I've stopped cursing, I get ladders. Because, you know, Lord of the Rings.
You're still thinking Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings is my only reference for sieging.
It's because we watch it like once a week.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings and then Lord of the Rings games I've played.
What's your plan if you're Agnes?
I guess just keep on keeping on. Like, she's thwarted everything else. Maybe try and get...
Thwarted? Or are you saying sorted with an accent?
I was saying thwarted. She's thwarted every one of his other plans.
Yeah, as it's working up. So far.
So maybe keep on keeping on and get a message to her man and his men.
Yeah, solid. I think.
Via her fishing folk.
Mm-hmm. She does have that avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Montague realises at this point, after weeks of siege, that he wasn't going to win this battle with force. The castle was too well defended. It was built in such a way that even though Agnes had next to no one in there with her, she would be able to hold it for a long time. They couldn't break their way in.
Yeah.
And Montague, I was saying earlier, I've got it in my notes here, but he launched his attack in January, so the castle had a significant amount of food stored away, which had been able to sustain them and would probably last for considerably longer. So Montague turned to trickery because he had to try something new. This wasn't working.
Can't win fairly. Realise you just want to win, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, pretty much. Because remember, he's under a lot of pressure.
Mm.
He has to win this. Either by going to the gates of the castle himself, or by having the guardsmen brought to him, Montague was able to speak to the man, the Scotsman, who guarded the castle gate, face to face. I'm not sure where it happened, how it happened.
Yeah.
But they have a chat. And Montague proposes a deal. He offered Agnes's guard a very large sum of money, which he physically had in his hands.
Yep.
He said, I will give you this money, All you have to do is leave the gate unlocked so that my men can enter the castle and take it.
Oh.
You just have to turn away.
Hard to pass up.
And the guard was very thoughtful and very taken with what must have been a very big bag of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And the guard took Montague's money.
No!
He agreed to the deal. He told Montague that he would leave the gate unlocked, he would leave it unmanned, and then they agreed on a time that Montague and his men would enter the castle.
Yep.
Montague was thrilled and sent the guard back to the castle unharmed so that nobody would know the deal that they had come up with. And this guard was now a very rich man.
Yeah.
This very rich man went back to his post, but then ventured further into the castle.
Oh.
He took his big bag of money, which he had taken, and went straight to Agnes. And he told her absolutely everything. He told her Montague's deal, the details of the plot, exactly when the English would be coming to the castle, expecting the main gate to be open. And from what I can see, he just kept the money.
Nice. Nice.
That was his now.
Can't respect that. Mm-hmm. He's definitely Scottish, isn't he?
Yeah. It's 100% what I would have done. Not even gonna lie.
Sure, yeah, I can help you with that. Just give me the money
totally
now.
Totally, don't even worry about it, but I will take payment up front.
Oh, yeah, payment up front, obviously.
Montague was a fool. So another plot was made. Now it's the dead of night. Everything's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And a group of Montague's men, along with Montague himself, are creeping towards the gate of Dunbar Castle. In my version, I imagine Montague very softly cackling, but that's probably not true.
Lots of rubbing his hands and sniggering to himself.
The men approached the gate, and just like they hoped, the gate was open, and the portcullis was raised, leaving entry to the castle completely free.
Interesting, interesting.
They could just walk in. As they got closer to the portcullis, one of Montague's men separated from the group and began to approach the castle at a slight run ahead of the group and just ahead of Montague himself. When he had just entered the castle, the portcullis suddenly dropped and separated him from the rest of his men, narrowly missing Montague himself.
Oh.
The English forces look up and see Agnes with all of her guards and servants on top of the gate. And Agnes shouts down, "Farewell, Montague. I intended that you should have supped with us and assisted us in defending the castle against the English."
<We're wankers. laughs>
So the plan had been that because Montague was leading the group, he would be the one to be cut off rather than one of his men, which would effectively end the siege.
Yep, that would have been good.
Yeah, but just the way luck had it, he wasn't at the head of the group, so he was left with his men.
I wonder what this other guy did. So, I could be Scottish, you know, before you all beat me up and put me in a jail.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I could totally, throw some stones off the top, you know. I can scrub a pan, get me in the kitchens. Just please don't kill me.
Yeah, I want to say that they just, released him or kept him prisoner. But
yeah.
I don't know. This is war, and war is rarely kind.
Yeah.
But once again, Montague has been completely humiliated.
Yep.
So he has to go back to his camp, some distance from the castle, and come up with a new plan.
King Edward must just be like, where is Montague? He should have had that castle weeks ago.
Do you think he's sitting on his throne just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you playing at? Where has this come from? This literally never happened before and you pick now?
Or like saying, so, how's progress? I thought you were done. Oh, yeah, it's fine. It should be any day now. Couple of days. Okay, sweet. So, you finished? I assume I've not heard of you. Oh, the slight hiccups. You know, it was snowing. There was a savage game of cards going on. We had to postpone in invading.
So, you know, it's been 3 or 4 months now. This was supposed to take a week.
No, it's fine. It's fine. We're running out of food, though. Can you send us some more food?
Well, that was an issue. This campaign was really expensive.
Yeah, I bet.
It was costing the English a lot of money to be there and carry out this siege.
Mm.
That's a lot of men to feed. Just a big old waste of time.
Yep.
So this is the situation Montague's in. And this is when he decided to play really dirty. Now, Agnes wasn't an only child.
Mm-hmm.
She had several siblings, including an older brother called John Randolph. And John became the Earl of Murray when their father died. Mm-hmm. I've seen Thomas was the Earl of Murray.
Yep.
John got the title. The title only passed down from fathers to sons.
Yes.
Because fuckery.
Yeah. I mean, when Agonist clearly deserved it.
Right. Anyway, John was a major figure in the fight against King Edward. He had been supporting King David, and he had become a bit of a pain in the ass for Edward, to be honest. Montague had his men hunt down John and bring him to Dunbar Castle.
Oh, it's getting nasty now. Mm-hmm.
Montague dragged John to within view of the castle, where Agnes could definitely see them. And as she watched, he threw a rope around John's neck.
Mm.
This is when Montague shouted to Agnes, telling her that if she didn't give up Dunbar Castle immediately, then he was going to hang her brother.
Bit brutal.
This is probably exactly where I would lose my ball.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to handle that. That would break me.
I think that's fair.
So, at this point, this dramatic, dirty play by Montague, how does Agnes respond?
I never liked him anyway. He was always pulling my pigtails, the arsehole.
You think?
Yeah, that's what I'm going with.
I'll give you a minute to make your guess. Ah, interesting. You're so clever. Has anyone ever told you that?
Not me.
Shut up. You are so intelligent. Agnes basically dared Montague to do it. It's kind of clever, really. She kind of played off the importance and the threat of Montague murdering her brother.
Mm.
And what she did was she reminded Montague that if he killed John, her brother, he would be giving Agnes more power.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the event of John's death, his land and wealth would be divided between her and her sister.
Nice.
They were his heirs. And she also warned him that it would effectively make her the Earl of Murray, even though technically that wasn't true.
Yeah.
But she said it anyway, because why the fuck not?
Why the fuck not?
So yeah, she basically said, do it, because it'll actually be really good for me if you do that.
Yeah.
Because I'll get lots of money, lots more resources, I'll have more land and more men at my beck and call. So yeah, fucking do it.
Fucking do it. Well, I wasn't far off, with my guess.
No, you weren't. So Agnes had scuppered Montague again.
Yeah.
There was now absolutely no use and no purpose in killing John. It would only bring him more grief, and Montague would then have the wrath of all of John's men and allies. So John was released. I shit you not.
This is playing it in my head like a South Park episode.
Yeah.
Ah, I've got your brother now. So fucking do it, you dick. Oh, well, probably shouldn't, I guess, eh? Oh, I just wanted it to work. And then just has a hissy fit.
Some gumption from Agnes, though. And I kind of hope that John knew what she was doing, that he didn't take it to mean that she really didn't care.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that was the case, but no. It was the only thing that would have worked. Because there's a good chance if Agnes had given up Dunbar Castle, Montague might have killed them both.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Yeah, they would have been fucked every which way.
Mm-hmm. So now, Montague is utterly desperate, as you can imagine.
Please!
Now this is where a man called Sir Alexander Ramsay of Dalhousie enters the story. He was another loyal supporter of King David II, who is the king that Edward Balliol is trying to usurp. And he had heard about the siege that Agnes had been under for months now. This is like 4 or 5 months by this point. I think it's the beginning of June. And he knows that it's at the hands of King Edward's army, which he doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
He'd also heard that now that they were getting nearly 6 months into the siege, the food and the supplies in the castle were getting low. Agnes and her servants and her guards wouldn't be able to hold the castle much longer, and it was important that they did.
Yep.
Because if the English got Dunbar Castle, you'd never get them out again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like a stain in the rug. So Ramsay came all the way from Edinburgh with 40 of his men to try and help Agnes bring them supplies and try to stave off the English attack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ramsay, unlike Montague, did his homework. And he knew about the secret sea entrance to the castle. So he and his men approached Dunbar by boat and were able to sneak in under the cover of darkness and made their way into the castle through this postern. From what I saw, there's a huge big like cavern under the castle. It's very cool. Mm-hmm. I would love to go. Ramsay met with Agnes that night and provided them all with food and supplies, made sure mm-hmm. they were okay. And they came up with a plan to try and break the English forces and make them give up.
Yeah.
Basically, they wouldn't be able to kill them all.
Well, I think with 40 men, that's not enough to fend off 20,000, is it?
Unless they stay in the castle, which seems to be working pretty well.
Well, that's true.
But this wasn't the plan. That night, as far as I can tell, that may be wrong, Ramsay led his men in a big charge on horseback. No, can't have been horseback. They came by boat. I read it as a charge, and I think in my head I had them on horses.
You can take horses on boats.
I don't know what size of boats they had. Mm. Anyway, big charge. Straight out the main castle gate and into the face of the English soldiers.
Nice.
Who had no idea they were even there. Gave them a hell of a shock, because as far as they knew, there were no fighting men in the castle.
Yeah.
And now these guys are just firing out straight at them.
Bold.
Yeah. And Ramsay and his men were able to push the English back from the castle all the way back to the camp that they had set up.
Nice.
A considerable distance away. They were forced to retreat. And there was only 40 men.
I know, that's pretty good going.
And at this point, in typical Agnes fashion, that morning, she had a loaf of bread baked. Fresh. Beautiful. Smells amazing.
Mm.
And had it sent along with a fancy, rich bottle of wine. To Montague himself. It was a very brave server who took it, this fresh loaf of bread baked that morning, this bottle of wine. And Agnes ordered for the servant to announce very loudly to everyone who could hear in the camp what Agnes had done and what was being delivered.
Mm.
She made a really big deal out of giving them this gift, therefore also making a big deal of the fact that they had been replenished with supplies. So we'd be able to stay in the castle for a lot longer.
Nice. Nice. Got enough to be giving it away.
It's just so ballsy. I know. Love it. And this was the breaking point for Montague. On the 10th of June, 1338, 5 months after he started this attack, Montague gave up.
He's got that, he went, oh, for fuck's sake.
He finally admitted defeat.
It was about time.
Yep. Agnes had beaten him. She had kept the English army away for 19 weeks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Isn't that incredible?
That's so good.
And yet he returned after costing the crown a bloody fortune. I think I saw it was like 6,000 marks, but I'm not sure what that translates to. But yeah, he retreated basically in disgrace. He had an alright life afafterwards. He was still in favour.
Sure, fine.
But he had been utterly defeated.
Ooh. Well, that's not so good, is it?
For him.
Yeah. For Agnes, fucking fair play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised in 19 weeks her man and co didn't come home.
Well, my thinking is, if there's 20,000 men, how are they going to get through?
Well, that's true. Hey, what are they really going
to
do?
Because if they're to the north, I think the cavern must be to the south. I don't know. For some reason, they couldn't get through. And if he's fighting...
Well, that's true. He might.
You're in the middle of that campaign. You can't really leave.
Yeah.
If you're under orders.
Straight up being busy.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 19 weeks.
19 weeks. Mental. Absolutely mental.
Now, the Second War of Independence lasted until 1357.
Oh, wow.
So another 20 years, nearly.
Jeez, oh.
And that was when the Treaty of Berwick was signed.
Mm.
Now, lots happened between then, 1338, Dunbar, and 1357, but I won't get into it here. But the treaty stopped the fighting, and it created a kind of uneasy peace between Scotland and England. Robert Stuart, Robert II, succeeded David II when he died in 1371. Edward Balliol was briefly crowned at Scone, but had to leave like the following year. So he was briefly made king, but then had a scarper, and Robert II took over.
Nice, nice.
Dunbar Castle was attacked again in 1548, later, during the rough wooing of Henry VIII. And it was almost completely destroyed at that point. But then it was ordered to be rebuilt.
Mm.
And in 1567, it was to Dunbar Castle that Mary, Queen of Scots, was taken to by Lord Bothwell.
Oh, okay.
When he kidnapped her and then later forced her to marry him.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he took her.
Mm.
And apparently there's a 12-foot square in the ruins that's still there, which was supposedly where Mary was kept while she was there.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It was in December of that year, 1567, that the castle was deliberately destroyed completely. And when I looked into it, the article said that the castle was slighted.
What does that mean?
I'm about to tell you.
Oh.
But that's the word. And it means that the Scottish Parliament ordered the castle to be destroyed.
Oh.
And it's a different parliament to what we understand now. Mm. But they ordered it to be destroyed so that nobody would be able to defend it anymore. Which we've heard about happening before.
Yep, yep.
But that's what a castle being slighted means. It means it was deliberately completely destroyed.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which I had never heard before.
No.
As for Agnes, I couldn't find much about her after the siege.
Ah, that's what I was curious about.
There wasn't much. There's next to nothing about Patrick. And everything I saw is just, oh, he's not as famous as his wife. Which is satisfying because I never come across that.
I know, that's good, isn't it?
There's mixed reports as to whether or not they had children, but it doesn't look like they did, from what I could tell. When they died, their estates were left to the children of Patrick's cousin, who had married one of Agnes's sisters.
Cool.
And I didn't mention it earlier, but Agnes and Patrick actually had to get permission from the Pope to get married because they were cousins. And initially, I think they lied and tried to say that they were more distantly related. They were like distant cousins. But it seems like they were cousins,
blah.
Which was legal if you got permission from the Pope.
Blah. Oh, it's probably a good thing they didn't have kids then.
Yeah, maybe. Fun fact. Agnes had a niece who was also called Agnes. And she was John's daughter.
Uh-huh.
The John who was captured by Montague.
Yep.
And she was Agnes's ward, which suggests to me they had quite a close relationship.
Yeah,
she looked after her. This second Agnes would go on to become the mistress of King David II.
Oh, there you go.
It was kind of a big thing to add to her CV, really, because being the mistress of a king, it was kind of a funny position. Because if you were the mistress of the king, you would usually be given like money. You might be cared for. You might be given land or a home. Your relatives would be favoured in court.
Oh, that's so funny.
A king's mistress was kind of an open secret.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. It's hard to explain. I've probably done it poorly, but it wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
No.
And Agnes was King David's mistress. There's proof that he was giving her money to support herself. There's proof of these payments.
Very cool.
And I think she was married to someone else, so she was also cheating.
Maybe he was just quids in. Like, oh, this would be great. Yeah, get your work in. We'll get enough money in. That'll be grand.
But David was supporting her financially. Oh. Considerable payments. And by this time, King David was married to his second wife, who had started out as his mistress.
Yeah, that's a pretty good career path.
She was called Margaret Drummond, but she was committing the cardinal sin of not providing David with children because he didn't have an heir.
That is bad.
So King David II tried to divorce Margaret, because he was actually in love with Agnes. He wanted to marry her instead, which I feel like probably had a lot to do with the fact that he thought Agnes could give him an heir.
Yes, probably.
Anyway, David pursued a divorce on the grounds of infertility, which is brutal.
That is brutal.
And I read that his divorce was denied by the Pope, but David was going to marry Agnes anyway.
Oh my God.
And this was before Henry VIII. Did his divorce thing. But David died before his plans came to fruition. He died before he could divorce Margaret and marry Agnes.
Tragic sex accident, I assume.
I mean, you could say that. I don't know if it's the truth.
Sure, we can just say things.
However, it seems like Agnes may have come out on top regardless, because David left her 1,000 marks as an inheritance.
Oh, that's pretty good.
For when he died. So she got to have a relationship with the king, was kept by him financially during their relationship, and then was left with a sizable pot at the end of it all, without having to go through the drama of a divorce.
I know, it's not bad going, really. A relationship with the king.
Yeah, it was most definitely that kind of relationship. And while it's not strictly related to our Agnes's story, I wanted to mention it because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, well, when else is that going to come up?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Our Agnes was buried near Mordington House, which is near Berwick-upon-Tweed. And she's in a burial vault there. But really, not much is known about her aside from the Siege of Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the story of Agnes Randolph.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
It's such a good story.
Such a good story. That was really good.
That's why I didn't want to just have it in the series of the Wars of Independence. It deserved its own episode because it's just such a good story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was top-notch story material. What a badass.
Right? She's so cool.
So cool.
She's not talked about enough.
I know. There was something similar, although not nearly as badass, at Stirling Castle. I think we talked about it in the blather, not the episode.
Yeah.
There was a wee plaque about how the lady of the house, a monk, and like two cooks held the castle for like 3 weeks against an invasion.
Yeah. It's badass.
It's badass. That's why people wanted castles, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you can consider this my love letter to Agnes Randolph, because I think she's really cool.
She is really cool.
I wish I knew more about her.
I know. Presumably she lived happily ever after.
I mean, as happy as you could, I guess. Yeah. I think there was very mixed records of when she died. I think she died in...
They'll all be dead now.
Well, I'm not debating that. Let me see. Consulting my notes. Yeah, one thing I saw said 1369, but another one said 1331.
Hmm. Let's choose 69. That'd be nicer.
Oh, no, that can't... It can't be 31. No, 61. 1361, I beg your pardon. Because the siege happened in 1338.
Yes.
Because it can't be 1331.
It's not bad into her 50s.
Well, yeah, it was either 1361 or 1369.
Mm.
I'm not sure.
Imagine not having kids drastically improved your life expectancy.
Could you?
Back when.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they didn't have kids because... Their titles and lands didn't get passed down to any children. Unless their children died, but...
Well, maybe.
I'm not sure. Unfortunately, that was common. Yeah. I think it's such a cool story.
Such a cool story. So good. Well, we have the finale next.
I know. I'm weirdly nervous.
I know.
It's a big episode.
Mm, I'm excited. We've had two cracking finales for season one and season two. So you've got
the pressure's high.
Building the hype on yourself.
Well, no, you're building the hype on me.
I'm building the hype. It has to be amazing.
Yeah, jokes. Kieran's actually going to prepare next week's episode.
Well, I can guarantee you that will be a short episode. 10 minutes of intro, 5 minutes of episode, and we'll just coast.
I mean, leave a comment somewhere if that's what you want the podcast to be. I'm sure there's someone out there that would suit the Kieran fans.
Mm, the generally... Briefly podcast.
Generally briefly.
The briefly spooky podcast. Well, we shall see you for the finale.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. I really, really hope you enjoyed the story because I love it.
Loved it.
And come join us for the finale of our third season, which doesn't feel real.
I know, because that'll take us about around to when the podcast launched as well, which is fun.
We launched on the 16th of April 2021.
Yep.
And the final episode of this season is coming out on the 15th of April.
Satisfying.
It's very nearly a full 12 months.
Mm.
So come and join us. I think we might try and do a YouTube live. We discussed it.
We could do that.
To do it for the finale.
Well, we'll chat and things.
Yes. I will release more details if that is something that happens.
Yeah.
But until then, we'll speak to you next week.
Yes, we will. Bye.
Bye.